Hello, and welcome to week 4. And this week, we will be taking a look at ancient India and China. Now in this lecture today, we're going to be looking at early India. Okay. Our question for today is, what do all of these characters mean, if you'll look on the pictures there? Back in the 1920s, an archaeologist working in northwest India discovered a remarkable set of ruins, all that remained of a huge ancient city. His discovery was the first clue the modern archaeologists had about the advanced civilization of the Indus River Valley that flourished thousands of years ago. Since that original discovery, archaeologists have learned a great deal about the Indus civilization. Among the artifacts they have found are small seals like the ones that are shown here that contain what appears to be writing. Despite the best efforts of the archaeologists and linguists, however, no one has yet been able to decipher even one word from any of the seals. Part of the challenge of deciphering the script is that related languages from which they can start their studies. In fact, no one knows even the first thing about the Indus language, though linguists have various theories. Some believe that the characters found in Indus writings are part of an alphabet like that of the Phoenicians. Others believe that each character represents an object or an idea like characters in Sumerian and Egyptian writing. Even among scholars who agree that characters represent objects, there is much disagreement. One symbol on the elephant tile, for example, has been variously identified as a fish, a twist of rope, and a noble title. Until such disputes can be resolved, there is little chance that the language can be translated. The Indus River, home of one of the ancient world's great river valley civilizations, flows across the northwest edge of the Indian subcontinent. As its name implies, most of the Indian subcontinent is occupied by the country of India. The Indian subcontinent includes three major geographic zones. In the far north are the Himalaya and systems, which separate India from the rest of Asia. In the south is the Deccan Plateau, a high plateau that receives less rain than other parts of the subcontinent. Between the mountains and the plateau are the northern plains, where society first developed in India. Flood deposits from three rivers, the Indus, Ganges, and Brahmaputra, enrich the soil of the plains, making it very fertile. Heavy rains also add to the fertility of the northern plains. Much of this rain is brought to India by seasonal winds called monsoons. During the summer months, monsoon winds from the southwest bring warm air and heavy rains from the Indian Ocean. Most of India's annual rainfall occurs at this time. In the winter, northeast monsoons blow cool, dry air from Central Asia, resulting in drier months. The people of India's first civilizations depended upon the monsoons to bring the water that their crops needed. Monsoon rains flooded rivers, which then deposited fertile silt in which farmers could grow their crops. With rainfall came the threat of devastation. If the monsoon rains were too heavy, crops, homes, and lives could be lost. And in contrast, if the rains came too late or did not last long enough, people could not go grow crops, and famine became a danger. Now, people have lived in the northern parts of the Indian subcontinent for thousands of years. At first, people lived as hunter-gatherers, but slowly people began to settle down in farming communities. In time, these communities gave rise to India's first civilization, which developed in the valley of the Indus River. Historians generally date the beginnings of the civilization to about 2500 BC, when people there first developed a system of writing. Now, the first ruins of the Indus Valley civilization found by archaeologists were the remains of two large cities, Harappa, named after a nearby modern city, and Mohenjo-Daro, which means Mound of the Dead, were both discovered in the 1920s. In fact, the civilization is sometimes called Harappan after the first ruins found. Since then, several large cities have been uncovered, hundreds of smaller towns and villages. Much of what we know about Indus society has come from studying their remains. Indus settlements were well planned and carefully laid out. Streets ran in a grid pattern, north, south, and east and west, with major avenues that were twice as wide as minor streets. People drew water from community wells or smaller wells dug into the courtyards of their homes, and public drainage systems carried away wastewater. In the largest cities, a walled, elevated citadel or fortress enclosed buildings such as granaries, warehouses, and meeting halls. Homes, workshops, and shrines were built outside the citadel. Such planning uniformity among cities suggests that a central authority held power over the civilization. Historians believe the economy of the Hindu civilization focused on agriculture and trade. Most people probably farmed and herded livestock. In cities, however, many people specialized in crafts such as pottery, metalwork, and jewelry. Examples of these crafts have been found in Harappan cities. The Hindus traded the goods that they produced not only with people of nearby communities, but with distant civilizations as well. Traders from the Indus Valley brought goods to locations as distant as Central Asia, the Arabian Peninsula, and Mesopotamia. Unfortunately, archaeologists and historians have not been able to learn many details about Hindu society. Although the people of the Indus Valley had a writing system, historians are not yet able to read it. The inability to read what people wrote makes it difficult to learn about society and daily life. Based on material evidence, some scholars believe that Hindu civilization was a single society rather than a collection of independent city-states. Now, as we have already discussed, cities and towns throughout the Indus Valley were remarkably similar. In addition, the people of the Indus Valley apparently shared common tool designs and a standard set of weights and measures. These factors all suggest a single authority and control, though it is not yet possible to know for sure. The civilization thrived from about 2500 BC to 2000 BC. After that time, the civilization began to decline. For example, the city of Mohenjo-Daro was abandoned. No one knows what led to the decline of the Hindu civilization, or even if there was a single cause. Evidence from Mohenjo-Daro suggests that the city suffered repeated flooding, which may indicate environmental reasons. Ancient records mention a river, the Sarasvati, that once flowed through the Indus Valley but later disappeared. The disappearance of that river could have had devastating effects on agriculture and sped the decline. Some historians also argue that invasion and disease helped end the civilization, though others argue that the available evidence does not support either conclusion. In truth, we may never know just why the Indus civilization disappeared. Sometime after about 2000 BC, a new people took control of India. Historians often refer to this group as the Aryans, from a Sanskrit word meaning noble. Eventually, the Aryans ruled over except for the far south. Historians are not sure exactly when the Aryans arrived in India or where they came from originally. Some historians assume they moved from the area between the Caspian and Black Seas, based on perceived linguistic ties to Indo-European languages spoken in that area. Others disagree, arguing the Aryans developed in northern India itself and did not move into the area. Little archaeological evidence remains to document the early Aryan period in India. Most of what we know comes from sacred writings called the Vedas, which include many details about Aryan history and society. As a result, this period in India history is often called the Vedic period. According to the Vedas, people settled in villages much smaller than the cities of the Indus Valley. Later, groups of villages banded together under regional leaders known as Rajas. According to the Vedas, the Raja was primarily a war leader who was responsible for protecting the people. In return for this protection, payments of food or money. Now, according to the oldest of the Vedas, the Rig Veda, Vedic society was divided into four social classes called Varnas. Each Varna played a particular role in society. Now, these roles are alluded to in a passage of the Rig Veda that describes the creation of humans. According to this passage, people of the four Varnas were created from the body of a single being. Now, the part of the body from which each Varna was created was tied to its duties. For example, Brahmins came from the mouth, the source of speech and wisdom, and thus were priests. Over centuries, the four Varnas of the Vedic period were divided into hundreds of smaller divisions called castes. Membership in a caste determined what jobs one could hold and whom one could marry. A social hierarchy developed in which some castes had more privileges than others, though the order of castes could and did change frequently. But not everyone in society belonged to a caste, though. A group commonly referred to as the Untouchables had exceptions of caste law and could perform only jobs that other castes did not, such as handling dead animals. Now, because the Vedas consist mostly of hymns and praise, we know a great deal about the religion of the Vedic period. For example, we know that people prayed to many aspects of a single eternal spirit, one such aspect being Indra, who ruled over heaven. The Vedas described how people worship the gods through fire sacrifices and the chanting of sacred hymns. In the sacrifices, priests offered food and drink by placing them on a roaring fire. Over time, the rituals surrounding Vedic religion grew more complex. Priests claimed that order in the universe could only be maintained through the religious rituals they performed, and as a result, the Brahmin Varna gained more influence in society. Now, during the Vedic period, we know that Indian society was divided into four Varnas or classes, Members of each Varna played specific roles in society. So, we have Brahmins, who were the highest, the smallest numerically. Brahmins were Vedic society's priests and teachers. Now, Kshatriyas were the warriors and rulers. Vaishyas were the common people of Vedic society, like the traders, farmers, herders, and so on. The Sudras were the servants who waited upon members of the other Varnas. And then there were the untouchables. Here's your assignment. Question 1. What are monsoons and how do they affect life on the Indian subcontinent? 2. Why did Indian civilization begin in the northern plains? 3. How might the geography of India have helped protect the Indus Valley civilization? 4. What were two characteristics of cities built in the Indus River Valley? 5. Why do many historians think that a single central authority ruled in the Indus Valley? 6. Do you think it's important that historians learn to read Indus writing? Why or why not? 7. What were the Varnas? Why did priests gain influence within Vedic society? 9. How do you think the development of the caste system affected India's social structure after the Vedic period? Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.